Bruchim Habayim, welcome everybody. We begin tape number 10. This evening, we're going to be directing our attention at the problem of rebellious teenagers. Our discussions have been focusing generally on the basic parent-child relationships, how to communicate with your children, and most of it comes out in the form of preventative medicine to try to ensure that your children won't grow up in a rebellious manner. However, there's a need, a great need, to speak about what parents should do if they find themselves in a position where their children have already started demonstrating signs of rebelliousness. Not necessarily have they thrown off or abandoned all semblances of Yiddishkeit, but they're already starting to show danger signs and leanings in the wrong direction. This will naturally alarm parents, certainly concern them, and it's very important for them to know what to do. But the first thing we have to understand is that parents have one means of control over their children, and it's one and one only, and that is communication. The Sefarno in Parshas Bahaloischa states that the only way children will listen to parents is if the children know that the parents love them and are therefore concerned about the children's needs. This is of course true, but in order for that to be true, there has to be communications between the parents and the children. If there isn't any communications, if the children don't speak to the parents, or the parents feel they can't speak to the children, the parents have lost control. There is no other way to control children outside of the realm of communications. You can try to induce punishment, you can try to threaten, you can try to take away privileges, you can try perhaps even to use positive reinforcement, where whenever they're good, you'll give them a reward. None of this will work in the long term unless there is communication between the parent and the child. You can't force a teenager to do something that he doesn't want to do. Now I correct that. You can force him to do something he doesn't want to do. You can't force him to be something that he doesn't want to be. There's a difference. You can put a gun to his head and you can tell him don't go out at night past your curfew. And if there's a gun pointing to his head, he probably will return before the end of the curfew, but you're not changing the child. There are a number of Gedolei Rosh HaYeshiva that have advised parents of such. Certain parents have come to certain Rosh HaYeshiva, certain Gedolim, with problems that my child does this or does that. One parent came to Rosh HaYeshiva, my child snuck a television into his room. And the bottom line is always the same. Smashing the television or forcing it out is not going to help in the long term. A child, before he's a teenager, punishment may work. Sometimes, in certain ways, depends how you do it, but a teenager, it's very, very difficult. Parents come to me and they tell me, Rabbi Shapiro, what do we do with our child? How do we deal with him? The first question is, do you have open communications with the child? If the answer is no, then the first thing, first and foremost, is work on that. It's not a magic wand and it's not a short-term, quick results type of solution. But there are no quick results type solutions. Without communications, you have no control over your children. With communications, then the fun starts. Then you have to know when to talk and how to talk and what to say. But without communications, there's nothing to talk about. You're out of business. This being the case, it behooves us to study how to communicate with our rebellious teenagers. And the first thing to learn is how to overcome the natural societal obstacles that we have as adults towards communicating with our rebellious teenagers. Obstacle number one is a major, serious, severe generation gap between us and our children. Now this may sound funny to you, because when we were children, our parents were very often European, grew up in a different continent, often didn't even speak English. And here we are on almost on a different planet. There you can understand generation gap. Now, here we are in Flatbush. Parents of teenagers are a lot younger than they were in the last generation, which means a lot closer age-wise to their children. They grew up walking the same streets as the children walk now, going to the same yeshivas as the children go to now, in the same buildings. So what kind of generation gap is there? That's one of the problems. There's an illusion of similarities between us and our children that blind us to the tremendous gap between us and them. Ladies and gentlemen, the world is not the same as it was 20 years ago. The world is certainly not the same as it was 30 years ago. We can expect a certain amount of reduction in the morals of society, because that's the way the world works. They get lower and lower. But the difference between this generation and even 10 years ago, to tell you the truth, is so great. The immorality has increased to with such a magnitude that it's impossible for us to understand ad heichon magiim hadvarim unless we go out and study it. If a child turns on the radio nowadays, listen to the songs that are being played, it is a lifetime lesson in nevola and znus and all types of immorality. Now, our rebbeim and our parents told this to us when we were kids. Don't dare compare the type of music that was being played on the radio when we were children to the type of music that's being played on the radio now. It's impossible to describe to somebody that doesn't know about it, to someone who's not familiar with it, and I wouldn't even dare try to describe it in a Beis Medrash. All a child has to do is turn on a radio, which seems to be somewhat of a very innocent act. You will get a lifetime's worth of tumma just by turning on that innocent little radio that all his friends are doing anyway. We don't understand what our children are being exposed to. We really don't. You can't pick up a comic book today and give it to a child. I'll tell you, I know of a balabas who, he told me that his son is already an adult, a man almost, a man in his 30s. The balabas told me that when this son of his was a young boy, he had a hard time learning how to read. His boy was in the Stolene Yeshiva. And the menahel of the Stolene Yeshiva then was a man by the name of Rabbi Nosson Sherman. Rabbi Nosson Sherman was the menahel of Stolen. And he advised the father to buy comic books for the son. And let him read comic books, and then he'll learn how to read. The Kachava, that's what happened. He bought the comic books, and he learned how to read. That was about 20 years ago, 25 years ago, maybe even 30 years ago. You can't do that anymore. When we were little kids, the comic books, Superman and Spider-Man and Batman, now the same titles have homosexual heroes and deal with immoral social issues. Same Spider-Man comic book is filled with this type of immorality. I'm not making an exaggeration. This is accurate and precise, and this is exactly what's happening. The world today looks at immorality as normal, totally normal. They have their own system of right and wrong, of honorable and dishonorable, And our children are absorbing it. Every time they walk into the street and a bus passes them by, every time they open up a newspaper and read what's going on, just think of it this way. When we were children and our fourth grade teachers gave us a social studies assignment, what would you do? You'd open up the front page of the New York Times and you'd see what's going on, let's say, in the Supreme Court, and that would be a social studies assignment. Now imagine the same fourth grade child last year who would be assigned a social studies report from his teacher, and he'd open up the first page in the New York Times to the Clarence Thomas trial. That's social studies. This is the Supreme Court. Or imagine a child picking up the cover article in Time magazine about O.J. Simpson. This is social studies. Now, we are able to understand this against the background of our upbringing. And we know that we grew up for 20, 30, 40, 50 years where social studies was relatively normal. And now there's something different about it. Something was lowered, something went haywire, something became corrupted. But our children are growing up like this. By them, this is Stam social studies, is Clarence Thomas. This is life. This is the world. This is normal human beings, the way they function. Our children are not growing up with our background. They are growing up in this new, strange world. We don't realize that. We don't realize that our children are growing up in a totally different world than we grew up in. Totally different. Children nowadays are wondering why they need to go to school. We know what a GED was when we were in high school. It's an equivalency diploma. The majority of our high school students in Masiftas nowadays know about it, and they know that it's an option for them. If they choose to drop out of school, they can take a course for a few weeks and get an equivalency diploma. And there are a number of children in Masiftas and Beis Yankivs. I'm not saying it's an epidemic, but even one is too much. It's more than one, however. That are opting for the GED, dropping out of school, for no reason other than the fact that it's easier. Why go through all this difficulty when you can have it easier? When we were in high school, a kid dropped out of school was unthinkable. And if a kid did drop out of school, where would he go? What would he do? Who would his friends be? Nowadays, not a problem. There are friends there for him or for her. They know where to find them. There are places for them to go and things for them to do. And it's a tempting life, a life of nothingness nowadays. The establishment, which is us, the authority figures, are looked at as a bunch of backwards, fossilized, unintelligent, unsuspecting, naive part of civilization that don't realize what's going on in the world today. Our children don't believe that we realize what's going on in the world today. And to a very large extent, they're right, because we don't know what's going on in the world today. We tell the children that it's a terrible, terrible thing to hang around in a pool hall. The children look at us and they think, what are you talking about? Can you, please, adult, tell me the difference between the pool hall that I go to Matzah Shabbos or the baseball game that you would like me to go to on Matzah Shabbos that you took me to last summer? We don't understand what's going on. We don't understand where the dangers are for our children. You think that the dangers are in the pool halls and in the pizza shops. That's nothing. Radios and the newspapers and the magazines are million times worse, and the kids know it. Look at a child that smokes marijuana as if he went off the deep end. And I'm not saying he didn't, but he looks back at us and says, it's much safer than regular cigarettes. Marijuana doesn't cause cancer, and everybody's doing it, so it knocks out a few brain cells. We have some to spare. Anyway, only going to get a GED. What do I need them all for? We don't understand, we don't have a handle on the way our children are thinking. And I'm not saying the way they're thinking is the glut, the straight way of thinking. But we don't have a handle on the way they're thinking. Because we don't understand, we don't have a perspective. We don't have the proper proportions. We don't understand where the dangers lie for our children and where they don't. If you have a child whose friends are committing crimes and they are traveling a one-way trip to Nowheresville, friends who don't keep Shabbos, friends who don't eat kosher, and you tell your son that he's a bum because he came home 2 hours late for his curfew, he's going to look at you like you're from another planet. Curfew, that's the issue. He's thinking to himself, I have friends who are afraid that they have AIDS. And you're telling me about curfews. We don't understand what's going on. And the first thing that we have to do is make ourselves understand. And the best way to do it is tsu'u'u'u, go out and see. Now listen very carefully. And remember, this evening's lecture is focused on those children who have already showed signs of the beginnings of rebelliousness. If your child is listening to rock and roll and you want to try to curb that, I would strongly suggest that you educate yourself as to what exactly it is your child is listening to, so that you can have an intelligent conversation with him about it. It's a lot worse than you think. And he knows that you don't know anything about it. He's laughing on the inside when you speak to him. I would suggest that anybody who is in this position, go out to the store, go out to a bookstore, and buy yourself a rock and roll magazine. And skim through it. Don't let anybody see you. And don't tell anybody I told you to buy it. Buy it. And skim through it. And take a look and see what your child is listening to. Go into a record store. You don't have to buy anything. Just read the labels on the tapes. Read the names of the songs. That's all you have to do. And if your shaitel doesn't stand on edge, then go back and read them again, because you missed a lot. This is what your child is involving themselves in. And if you intend on having any sort of intelligent communication with your children about it, you have to know what you're talking about. If you're busy telling your son to stay out of the pizza store Matzah Shabbos, and he knows that he's listening to the radio and he has his tapes and he's reading the magazines and he's doing all this, and my mother's worried about the pizza store on Matzah Shabbos on 13th Avenue in Borough Park. Now, the pizza store on 13th Avenue, Borough Park, and Matzah Shabbos is not the Academy of Shame and Aver, we understand. But if the child knows that he's involved in things that are million times worse, and this is what my parents are concerned about, he laughs. And it doesn't matter if you're a parent or you're a menahel in a school, or you're any type of authority figure. We don't understand what is priority, what is the greatest danger to our children, and what is just much lower on the list of important things. I would suggest that if you are concerned about the places that your child is hanging out, rather than just telling him, well, how could you hang out in a pizza shop on a Matzah Shabbos, and how can you be in a pool hall, and how can you go to Manhattan? Do you know what goes on in Manhattan? I would suggest you should know what you're talking about before you say anything. Do like one of the menahalim of one of the prominent Beis Yankivs did. He told me this. I won't say his name. He went over here to the pool hall. He came up there one evening, man with a white beard. He came up there to see what it's like. And the Italian by the name of Gino behind the counter came over to him and said, Are you here to make trouble? He saw this man with a white beard and his arms folded, standing by the door, scoping out the people playing pool. Are you here to make trouble? So he says, no, I heard that some of the girls in my school are here and I wanted to see what it's all about. And he said, okay, fine. If he can do this, this man with the long white beard, trust me, you can do it also. Don't tell anybody I told you. But if you intend to have an intelligent conversation with your child about it, it would be unfair to you if he knows everything that's going on there and you don't. I guarantee that if you ever tried to have such a conversation with your children about it, they looked in you and said, Mommy, Tati, do you really know what's going on? Were you ever there? Do you have any idea what's happening? What's the big deal? Now, they may be right. They may be wrong. You're unarmed. You have nothing to say. You don't know anything about the rock and roll. You don't know anything about the pool halls. You don't know anything about the pizza stores. Do you know anything about the friends that you tell them so strongly to stay away from? Do you really know anything about them? You may know how they dress. You may know a little about their daily itinerary. But do you really know about them? I strongly suggest, if you intend on telling your children to stay away from certain friends, that you find out what exactly it is about those friends that you could use to show your child, look, this is not the type of person that you would want to hang around with. Now, the truth is that our children, naturally, it's nature, they do respect what their parents say. If they can bring themselves to believe that their parents know what they're talking about, it doesn't mean that they're always going to listen, but it carries weight. If you know what you're talking about and your child sees it, they will look up to you. There's so many children that are just turned off, just put up walls between them and all authority figures. When the menahel of their Beis Yankiv will come over to them and say, you were in the pizza shop and this and this time, and it's such a terrible thing, and we're going to throw you out of the school because of that. I'm not saying that a school doesn't have a right to set their own rules. Do you know the way the child looks at this? The child is looking at it. Do you know anything about my lifestyle? Is this the worst thing I'm doing? Is this the worst thing anybody in the school is doing? What is the... Is this proportionate? Is this in perspective with what's really happening? And it's really not. It's really not. Pizza stores are something out of the 70s or the 80s. Nowadays, they are not... There are rebellious youth. The problem with our rebellious youth is not that they're in the pizza stores. It's not their problem. And again, I'm not saying that a school should not take steps to make sure the children don't hang around in the pizza store. But you have to communicate it in such a way to the children that they're not going to think that you're from Mars. And they're going to think that you're from Mars if this is all that's on your mind. And they're right. Not that you're from Mars, but you certainly haven't visited Earth in a long time. Because if you would have visited Earth, you would know that there are much stronger things to be concerned about. The pizza store is nothing. I remember when I was a kid, the Rebbeim, there were a lot of yeshivas that asered, they prohibited the hora to be danced by chasanis. Do you remember in the days when Shlomo Kalbach was prohibited to the Bachurim in yeshiva? Okay, now, I'm not saying that that was wrong, but nowadays, if a kid listens only to Shlomo Kalbach, he's from the tzaddikim of the yeshiva. What else is there? Everything else is worse. And if the only thing they do by a chasn is the hora, so it's the most chassidish wedding in the world. Things changed. And it's not only the hora and it's not only the Jewish music that changed. Life changed. And if our children are already absorbing that sad, pathetic lifestyle, and we want to do something about it, we got to know the nature of the disease. A doctor can't cure a patient unless he really studies a lot about the disease. We know nothing about it. We're stuck in the olden days. There's a whole new world with a whole new bunch of nisyonis, whole new group of temptations for our children. And we don't know anything about them. We don't know what's dangerous as opposed to not dangerous. We don't know what looks bad but really isn't, as opposed to something that looks innocent but is really terrible. I know a parent came to me and was very concerned about his children. Now, there's reason to be concerned. Do you know what the parent's reason for being concerned is? Because when the child goes out on Motzei Shabbos, he goes to Manhattan. Why does a child have business in Manhattan, the mother tells me. And where do they go in Manhattan? So the mother says, I don't know. They say they go to the pizza store. I say, do you believe they go to the pizza store? And she says, yeah. I say, so what is your problem? Why do they have business in Manhattan? I say, would you be happier if they went to the pizza store in Borough Park? Whether the mother should be concerned or shouldn't be concerned, she has absolutely no idea. You tell a child, Manhattan, what does it mean to him? What does it mean to him? Tell him those words, you have nothing better to do. Yeah, what business do you have in Manhattan? What does that mean to a child? It's total lack of communication. You got to speak a language that the children understand. And you can't speak the language unless you understand what it is that you are talking about. We can no longer, as parents, control our children and direct them as passive observers from the back. You have to go to their side, up front, and see what it is that they are doing, because we have no idea what it is until we find out firsthand from ourselves. That's the first thing. Whatever your concerns are about your children, go out and get information. Find out what's really going on. Now, don't go to your child's menahel in yeshiva, because he or she may or may not know what's going on. I know some that do and some that don't. Don't go to your local rav unless you're sure that he does know. Some do and some don't. Go out and learn for yourself. It's your child. I know a Rosh Yeshiva called me just last night, and he asked me, he says he heard that some of his Talmidim are hanging around in the pool hall. Did I see any of them there? I said, I don't know what your Talmidim look like. I mean, I know they look like Yeshiva Bacharim, but that narrows it down. But I can't tell you which ones are yours. They don't have the name of your Yeshiva painted on their forehead. He wants to know how he can find out. He wants to be able to find out. He can't go there himself, because the kids in the yeshiva won't be able to accept that. So he wants to know what he can do. Maybe he's going to sit outside the whole night and see who goes in and who goes out from a car. That's possible. But I asked him, I said, and this Rosh Yeshiva is an old friend of mine for years. I said to him, let's say you find out that they're going there. What are you going to do about it? You're going to aser the place? Fine. So they'll go to a pool hall elsewhere. Or they'll go to this pizza store. Or they'll go somewhere else, which is just as bad. What are you going to do? Why is this such a tremendous concern, as opposed to all the other places where your Talmidim are? He said if one of your Talmidim went every Motzei Shabbos to the hockey game, you wouldn't be as upset? The hockey game where they drink beer. The hockey game where this guy sitting next to you is eating a trefa hamburger and is half shicker and is screaming and yelling and really enjoying the fight that just broke out on the court. That's not a problem. But over here in this place where there are no alcoholic beverages, there's really no food except for little candies and stuff that you can get at a concession, where any fight that breaks out, in the rare instance that it does, is immediately broken up and the people evicted, never allowed to return. That's the penalty for fighting in this place. It does bother you? Why? Because they're holding sticks and shooting balls into holes. I'm not telling this Rosh Hashiva what his policy should be. I'm giving him information that he's not aware of. And if you want to make a policy, at least make it based upon an educated awareness of what's happening. Now, if the students would perceive the pool hall as just a place that, you know, you don't go there the way adults do, it will be fine. But they don't look at it that way because they didn't grow up in the generation that we did. They're going to ask the same kashas to this Rosh Hashiva about the hockey game that I did. They may not be able to articulate it in that way or express themselves, but that's what they're going to be thinking in their minds. And they'll never be able to accept it. It doesn't matter if you're a Rosh Hashiva or a parent or anything. If you have a concern about your children, find out, and you'll get a bonus for this too, because they'll respect you for doing it. If you come back to your child and you say, look, this is what I found out, he's going to respect you, because he's going to see that you were really concerned about him enough and open-minded, concerned/open-minded, to be able to go do research and gather information for his benefit, as opposed to what he looked at, the way he looked at you beforehand, which was a hysterical parent that really is too closed-minded to find out the real story and merely hysterical. Going to gain his respect if you're able to produce an intelligent argument for what you're trying to get him to do. It's A, find information. B, you have to understand the value system that children have nowadays. Children nowadays, for whatever reason, and perhaps we'll go into the reason at a future lecture, are not so interested in what they should be doing right as they are interested in what they should not be doing wrong. In other words, if you tell a child, do this because it's right, that will not motivate today's American teenager as much as if you tell him, don't do this because it's wrong. They'll always want to know what's wrong with this and what's wrong with that. It's not a question of, well, this is right, so I'm going to do it. Right by them means anything that's not wrong. Anything that you can't give them a reason that it's wrong, it's automatically right. Even among themselves, and they have their own honor system, their own expectations, their own standards of morals, that unfortunately are not, it doesn't come from the Torah, it comes from American society. The concept of respect. The children will not be motivated to be respectful to each other. Rather, their motivation is not to be disrespectful. Even made disrespectful into a verb. You are disrespecting him. And they have a slang for it. They shortened the word. They contracted it. You are dissing him. That's what the word means. You are disrespecting him. The fact that you are lacking respect, that's not the issue. The issue is always you're doing something wrong. You have to be aware of this and be in touch with their thoughts and their words and the patterns of the way they work. This is number one. It's always much more effective to tell them what they're doing is wrong as opposed to, look, you're not doing what's right. That's A, it's much more effective. On the other hand, though, because our children are getting such a disproportionate system of morals, where only wrong is their concern, the sur meira, it's also important for parents to inculcate children with the concept that there is such a thing as doing right. Not only is there sur meira, avoiding wrong, we have to constantly reiterate, mostly by example, that there's such a thing as doing the right thing. Asay toiv. When criticizing or speaking to the children, it's much more effective if you use a sur meira approach. But it's also necessary, in the long run, to teach them that there is such a thing as asay toiv, because that's what they're lacking. Even if a kid is considered a good bal midas today, he could very often be considered a good Balmidas by American teenage standards. Give you another example. You want to tell a child, you want to express to him that he doesn't appreciate something. Perhaps he doesn't harbor the proper amount of gratitude that he should for what you've been doing for him. As an example, the concept of appreciation and gratitude is something that you'd like to teach him and perhaps mention to him about and perhaps criticize him regarding. The concept of gratitude and appreciation is something that children don't think about in those terms. It's too abstract and it's too asay toiv oriented as opposed to sumera. If you go to your child and say you don't appreciate, you're not grateful, it'll probably, if he's a rebellious teenager, go in one ear and out the other. But if you want to elicit a reaction from him and you want to get the message across, tell him he's a user. That's the word to use. You're a user. You use me. Which means the same thing as taking without giving back. I guarantee, 10 out of 10 cases, it will evoke a response. Maybe hostile. It will not go in one ear and out the other. Because that's terminology that the children understand and they use. Because the difference between somebody that doesn't that lacks appreciation as opposed to somebody that is a flagrant user, that one, the lack of appreciation idea emphasizes the lack of good. Good, in general nowadays, doesn't really carry a lot of weight. User represents the fact that you hurt somebody, the fact that you did something wrong, not only in midas, in action. User means you actively did something wrong to somebody. The wrong that you did is only a lack of appreciation. But children don't think all that far. It means the exact same when all is said and done. But all will not be said and done. So you only have a few words worth, and you should make them count. Listen to your children. You'll be able to pick up, I don't want to say the language, because you don't want to pick up the language. You do want to pick up, though, the way they look at meaningful things, the way they look at things as not being meaningful. You're going to pick up their value system and their honor system, and you're going to understand what carries weight by them and what doesn't carry weight by them. But you have to listen. Listen to the way they talk about their friends. Listen to the way they talk about themselves. Listen when they criticize somebody, what words they use, what concepts they're thinking of. And store it up in your mind. When you want to express that concept back, try to remember the way to say it that's going to be meaningful to him. It's in all cultures are like this, all societies are like this. You can have yeshiva bachar, who encounters a very nice, intelligent college professor. And the college professor wants to explain to the yeshiva bachar that he did something wrong. And he uses certain phraseology, certain terminology, certain mannerisms, and a certain way of expressing himself. And yeshiva bachar is going to go in one ear and out the other. And then you have another yeshiva-oriented person that uses the right yeshivisha word here, and the right movement of his eyes, and the right movement of his hand, the right mannerisms, and the right phraseology, and the communication is there, and they said the exact same thing. Everybody speaks in a certain way based upon their society, their group, their culture. And if you have a rebellious teenager, he is officially a member of a different culture. The rebellious teenagers is a different culture. And just like if, let's say, you had a really yeshivish son, you'd know to speak to him in the really yeshivish language because that's what he understands. And you would know that it would behoove you to learn that language, be able to communicate with him. so too it behooves you to learn the language of what your child, the language that your child speaks, in order to be able to communicate with him. Now, you don't have to use all the slang words. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the way he thinks and the way he feels criticized, the way he feels what's right and the way he feels what's wrong. The different ways to express it. And it's very important for you to be able to do that. Again, the way to do that is to listen very, very carefully. If you want to learn how to criticize a teenager, listen to the way the teenager criticizes his friends. Listen to the words. Listen to what bothers him about his friends. Certain things bother them and certain things don't. Betrayal of trust by teenagers is a very serious crime. Teenage culture, as opposed to other things that we would consider terrible, sloppiness, room is a pigsty, it's nothing by them. I'm not saying it shouldn't be, but they don't consider it a major crime. So I slopped up your house. So clean it up, I'll clean it up, you'll clean it up, someone else will clean it up. Big deal. Betrayal of trust, even a small one, is a terrible crime by them. You have to pick up what he considers a terrible crime and what he doesn't, and then use it to your advantage. When he slops up his room, present it as a betrayal of trust. I gave you this room, and now look what you did to me. You messed me up. You messed me up. You messed me up. Look what you did. You have to present it in a way that's used, that communications with your teenager is to sit down and talk to him. There's nothing wrong with a parent admitting to his son or to her daughter, look, I want to know you. I don't really... You're my son. You're my daughter. It's so important for me to know what makes you tick, what you like, what you don't like. You're growing up in a different world. I want to know about it. I want to understand what you like and what you don't like. I want to know what attracts you and what repulses you. I want to know you. You are my child. I'd love to get to know you better. Ask them. Sit down and speak to them. If you've been having trouble with your teenager and the relationship is strained, the way to start is by sitting down with them and saying, okay, look, let's start new. Let's start. I'm not saying that I can approve of everything you do, but I do want to understand it. And you have to listen open-mindedly, not non-judgmentally, because then and there, your job is not to approve or disapprove. Your job is to learn and to understand. It doesn't mean that you agree with everything that the child does. But even if you disagree, it's really important for you to understand what it is that you disagree with. And sometimes the only option you have to understanding what it that thing is that you disagree with is by asking the child. If you have, again, if you have a rebellious teenager, the first step is to sit down and say, let's get to know each other better. Get about rules, and rules have a different time. There's not the time for rules. Forget about criticisms. That's not the time for criticisms. That's the time for sitting down and two people getting to know each other better. Because the first step, very, very first step in reconciling with the teenager is to open communications. And the very first step in opening communications is getting to understand each other, getting to know who it is that you're communicating with. And then communications come natural. If you're talking to a stranger, or if the child thinks that you're a stranger, forget it. Whatever you say is not going to count. And I said here once before, and I'm going to say it again, the major principle in loving a teenager is to get him to understand that you love him as opposed to you loving the person who you think he is. When a teenager says, my father, my mother does not love me, they don't mean that they don't have love. They mean that the love is not directed at me, it's directed at that child who they think I am. If you don't know somebody, you can't love them. That's the principle. You cannot love somebody if you don't know them. This I learned from Rabbi Nachman Breslev. Rabbi Nachman Breslev was confronted by somebody that asked him how he explains the fact that there are so many tzaddikim among the misnagdim that oppose him. His answer was, they don't oppose me. They oppose the person who they think I am. And he deserves it. Just like you can't oppose or harbor any negative feelings towards somebody if you don't know who they really are, you can also not harbor any love or positive feelings towards somebody if you do not know who they are. If a child feels that you do not understand him, he will automatically feel unloved, not because you are not good enough at spilling out love, but because your love is directed at somebody else, not at him. Because if you don't know him, you don't understand him, it's not him that you're loving. It's some imaginary child that doesn't exist. Therefore, if you want to reconcile or rectify or deal or cope with your rebellious teenager, the first step is to get to understand him and him to understand you. And open up communications. The three ways to do it. One, summarize. Know what you're talking about. Be informed about what you're talking about. That's one. Two, learn what he values, how he criticizes people. Learn what makes him tick, what can turn him on. Plug into that. Open your ears. Listen to him and understand his culture, because you're dealing with somebody from a foreign culture. And three, sit down and put the cards on the table. These are the first steps reconciling with a rebellious teenager. Now at this point, we're going to take questions. And the way we do it here is that the questions are written on a piece of paper and then handed up. Henry? Okay, we have a large pile of questions. If we don't finish all the questions tonight, we're going to continue the questions next week. If the pool hall or similar pizza shop is take, not such a good atmosphere, what can we say if we are educated, if everyone else is doing it, but you feel this is not the best atmosphere for him? Should we give in? Or if the child doesn't think anything wrong with messy room and you would like it clean? Okay, it depends on the child. First of all, is this the worst thing that the child is doing? Well, the question... Okay, first thing is this indeed his first exposure to this lifestyle? If it is, I assume it is, because if it's not, the question doesn't start. If it is his first exposure to this lifestyle, what you have to do is learn about children that were in the same position as your son or daughter and started with an innocent exposure to this type of lifestyle and ended up all the way down. That's the lesson we learned from Shnei B'nai Aharon, right? Watch out that this shouldn't happen to you is not nearly as effective as watch out that this shouldn't happen to you the way it happened to them. You have to find out if A, what you think is going to happen really has a chance of happening. How great a chance is it? And what taka happens in a worst case scenario or in a probable case scenario? And the way to do it is to find out what happens to kids that aren't being exposed to that type of lifestyle. And then show it in front of your son. Also, say the same thing. I would suggest listening to the radio, and if he sees that you know what it is, it's pretty obvious why a child shouldn't listen to the radio. But although it's so obvious, we don't know what to say. The reason it's such a shud, because we don't know what to say, is because we don't know about what we're talking about, the thing we're talking about. It will be obvious. And if he thinks it's innocent and everybody else is doing it, you have to show him that there are a lot of people that thought like that, and look where they are now. This is one of the most powerful tools that I happen to use in Project Rejuvenation, where a child will want to drop out of school, let's say, or want to start a lifestyle, and they'll say it's fun, everybody's doing it. But I'll come to them with a half a dozen kids that have done it, that I'll tell them, don't be stupid. I regret it. We regret it. Because they do. They're not going to believe you, but they'll believe other kids. So you're not a kid, you can't change that. But at least you can draw his attention to those kids. Obviously got ruined because of it. Now, of course, everybody considers themselves a very big chacham, and that, well, the whole world got ruined, but not me, it's not going to happen to me. And in that way, kids are a lot like adults, because adults play that game also. And the only thing you can do at that point is monitor them, guide them, say, all right, look, you want to do what you want, you do what you want, but I'm going to be there with you. And then when he starts going a little more into that lifestyle, you be there to point it out, and you be there to pull him out. But the first and foremost thing that you must do is to be informed and to be aware of people who were victims of the danger that you claim your son is in now, and then point that out to him. Your child talks to girls. You know and he knows it's wrong, but he doesn't want to stop. If you come down strong, he'll shut you out. How do you deal with it? The average child who talks to girls, probably talking to girls is not his only problem. It's probably just part of the lifestyle that he's chosen. Let's take the two possible cases. If the only thing this kid does bad is talk to girls and everything else is fine, I would say to focus more on the Asay Toiv. If he's a fine yeshiva bacha, just he has this thing, he talks to girls, whatever it is, make him learn more Torah, and in such a case, he will eventually monitor him. And monitor him. If he doesn't start backsliding more, if this is just he has this thing, I would say concentrate more on the positive. And he himself knows, and he himself will realize, and he will eventually deal with it. If, however, this is, when you say talks to girls, it's just like the symbol of an entirely different lifestyle that a kid knows is wrong, then the question is a lot more complex. And it depends on why he got into this lifestyle, what appeals to him in it, and it's usually not the girls. Girls are just incidentally there. It's very rare that a yeshiva bacha should go off the derech because girls appeal to him. That doesn't usually happen. Usually he becomes weak and vulnerable because of some other problem, maybe a problem at home, maybe a psychological difficulty, maybe he has a low self-image. And people like that, with no willpower and with very little yirah shamayim, sort of gravitate towards the easiest way out. And the easiest, most attractive way out are the girls. But the girls are just the result of the problem. And then you have to diagnose what the problem is. What should children, teenagers, do in their free time? Free time. Teenagers have free time. Don't we always complain about how the schools overload them with homework? And don't we always complain about how they don't have any free time? What should they do in their free time? I don't know, it depends on the kid. We had, when I was a teenager, what do we do in our free time? We did a lot of, well, listen, it depends on the neighborhood, it depends on the teenagers, it depends on his friends, it depends on his own temperament, it depends on a lot of things. There really is no one answer that I could give you, or even one group of answers that I can give you what teenagers do in their free time. When I was yeshiva bach and I went to Chaim Berlin for high school, what we did in our spare time, well, I would recommend it for some people, and for some people I wouldn't. And what they told us that our Rebbeim did in their spare time, I wouldn't recommend for a lot of people either. But for some people, you know, I guess all's well that ends well. So it really depends on many, many, many factors, and it's not something that I could answer with a blanket statement. What boys' haircuts are inadmissible to Jewish day schools and are justifiable? Is it justifiable for them to be expelled for this reason? Different schools have different standards. If a kid from Satmar comes in one day with a mushroom haircut, they will probably be quite disturbed. But there are other schools where that's very, very normal. Now, generally speaking, the way a child dresses and the way a child cuts his hair, whether you want to clamp down on it or not, depends a lot on why he's doing it. Again, you can have a regular fine yeshiva bacha who walks in one day, and this happened when I was a teenager. Fine yeshiva bacha walked in one day to the Beis Medrash. I remember when it was during night seder. This was in the 70s, where the tight clothes were the style, black shirt and black pants. It was black turtleneck, and the mashgiach, the night seder mashgiach, called him over and said, he looks like a dancer. And this was a fine bacha, and he said, I don't know, I thought it was interesting, you know, look, you know. And he asked him, how do you feel about it? How do you feel the way you dress? Said, that's nothing. And he lied. Unless you feel differently like that. But they didn't do anything. They figure, look, the guy's in yeshiva the whole day. He needs some form of self-expression. If this is the worst thing that he does, it's a mishigas, he'll get over it. And he did. If, on the other hand, this is just one way of his getting into the wrong crowd, then that's another story. A lot of different reasons and ways a child can start putting on different types of clothes. Usually it is a problem. But usually the clothes are just a symptom of the problem. And the clothes aren't the problem themselves. If it's just the clothes without any problem, again, focus on the positive. He'll grow up. The clothes are a symptom of the other problem. So then focus on the other problem. So in other words, mamon afshach. If we're talking about a kid who the clothes are his, that is the problem itself, don't worry about the clothes. If you're talking about a kid that the clothes are only a symptom of a deeper problem, don't worry about the clothes. Worry about a deeper problem. Now, the only time clothes are a problem is if like this. If let's say you have a chassidus shebacha, and a chassidus shebacha wants to go off the derech, he does it differently than, let's say, yeshiva shebacha. Yeshiva shebacha will change his clothes. He'll be into a certain type of dvar masurim. And that way he will blend in with the wrong crowd, with a lower crowd. Chassidus shebacha, that usually comes last, the changing of the clothes. Start with credit cards, we'll start with cars, we'll start with telephone chips. But the levush will still remain. And that's very good. Because levush keeps him out of certain parts of society. Keeps the girls away from him. And it keeps him away from becoming a member of a different type of group. Once somebody like that, whose clothes were the geder and siyug for him, change those clothes, that's trouble. Then you got to clamp down and make sure he doesn't change the clothes, because that means trouble if he does.